All of this shouldn't be too surprising if we take the view that patterns are all the brain knows about. Brains are pattern machines. It's not incorrect to express the brain's functions in terms of hearing or vision, but at the most fundamental level, patterns are the name of the game. No matter how different the activities of various cortical areas may seem from each other, the same basic cortical algorithm is at work. The cortex doesn't care if the patterns originated in vision, hearing, or another sense. It doesn't care if its inputs are from a single sensory organ or from four. Nor would it care if you happened to perceive the world with sonar, radar, or magnetic fields, or if you had tentacles rather than hands, or even if you lived in a world of four dimensions rather than three. This means you don't need any one of your senses or any particular combination of senses to be intelligent. Helen Keller had no sight and no hearing, yet she learned language and became a more skillful writer than most sighted and hearing people. Here was a very intelligent person without two of our main senses, yet the incredible flexibility of the brain allowed her to perceive and understand the world as individuals with all five senses do. This kind of remarkable flexibility in the human mind gives me high hopes for the brain-inspired technology we will create. When I think about building intelligent machines, I wonder, why stick to our familiar senses? As long as we can decipher the neocortical algorithm and come up with a science of patterns, we can apply it to any system that we want to make intelligent. And one of the great features of neocortically inspired circuitry is that we won't need to be especially clever in programming it. Just as an auditory cortex can become visual cortex in a rewired ferret, just as visual cortex finds alternative usage in blind people, a system running the neocortical algorithm will be intelligent based on whatever kinds of patterns we choose to give it. We will still need to be smart about setting up the broad parameters of the system, and we will need to train and educate it. But the billions of neural details involved in the brain's ability to have complex creative thoughts will take care of themselves, as naturally as they do in our children. Finally, the idea that patterns are the fundamental currency of intelligence leads to some interesting philosophical questions. When I sit in a room with my friends, how do I know they are there, or even if they are real? My brain receives a set of patterns that are consistent with patterns I have experienced in the past. These patterns correspond to people I know, their faces, their voices, how they usually behave, and all kinds of facts about them. I have learned to expect these patterns to occur together in predictable ways. But when you come down to it, it's all just a model. All our knowledge of the world is a model based on patterns. Are we certain the world is real? It's fun and odd to think about. Several science fiction books and movies explore this theme. This is not to say that the people or objects aren't really there. They are really there. But our certainty of the world's existence is based on the consistency of patterns and how we interpret them. There is no such thing as direct perception. We don't have a people sensor. Remember, the brain is in a dark, quiet box with no knowledge of anything other than the time-flowing patterns on its input fibers. Your perception of the world is created from these patterns, nothing else. Existence may be objective, but the spatial-temporal patterns flowing into the axon bundles in our brains are all we have to go on. This discussion highlights the sometimes questioned relationship between hallucination and reality. If you can hallucinate sensations coming from a rubber hand, and you can see via touch stimulation of your tongue, are you being equally fooled when you sense touch on your own hand or see with your own eyes? Can we trust that the world is as it seems? Yes. The world really does exist in an absolute form very close to how we perceive it. However, our brains can't know about the absolute world directly. The brain knows about the world through a set of senses, which can only detect parts of the absolute world. The senses create patterns that are sent to the cortex and processed by the same cortical algorithm to create a model of the world. In this way, spoken language and written language are perceived remarkably similarly, despite being completely different at the sensory level. Likewise, Helen Keller's model of the world was very close to yours and mine, despite the fact that she had a greatly reduced set of senses. Through these patterns, the cortex constructs a model of the world that is close to the real thing, and then, remarkably, holds it in memory. It is memory. What happens to those patterns after they enter the cortex that we'll discuss in the next chapter.